Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. And I want to mention one thing. A number of you have been kind enough every once in a while to ask about some of the historical ideas that I put out on this show, if you're interested in that. And I think more and more people are. You might want to take a look at my latest novel that I just published. It's called Milwaukee Jihad, J-I-H-A-D, by Matthew Flynn. Milwaukee Jihad. Easily get it on Amazon. And you will see, and it's I think, entertaining. It's an action novel, but you will see the basis for a lot of the historical things we talk about on this show. So that's Milwaukee Jihad, J-I-H-A-D, by Matthew Flynn. Get it on Amazon, anywhere else. I want to go to Clarence Thomas. Gina Beauclair had brought him up before. And there's something else that he's up to that is perhaps equally damaging to our democracy. You know, we have freedom of speech in this country. We have freedom of the press. An easy way for an autocrat to get rid of that is simply to permit libel lawsuits against people who say something or publish a book they don't like, and then fund it secretly through autocrats or stealing money from the government like they do in Russia. Well, Clarence Thomas is proposing to bring that to the United States, and here's how he would do it. He said that he wants to roll back the holding in New York Times versus Sullivan from the early 1960s. Now, what was that case, and what impact would that have on our right to free speech in this country? It's insidious, is what it is. The New York Times versus Sullivan, up until then, if you didn't like what somebody said about you, you could just sue them for libel. And when you did sue them for libel, it cost attorney's fees, and it would bankrupt small papers, and it suppressed speech in this country. Well, New York Times versus Sullivan, the New York Times had published an article, and there was a sheriff named Sullivan in that area of Alabama in the South. And he felt it had to do with him, even though he wasn't mentioned in it, but basically saying how bad things were. So he sued the New York Times for libel. And of course, he got a bunch of right-wing groups to fund it, and they were trying to bankrupt the New York Times. Well, the Supreme Court ruled, the New York Times, I think Floyd Abrams was their lawyer. He's one of the great First Amendment lawyers. I represented a TV station and a radio station in Milwaukee for about 40 years. And this is a big part of my practice. And I've attended seminars that Floyd Abrams spoke at. In any event, the Supreme Court came out with a holding that basically ensures free speech in this country. And here's what it says. It says, if you're a public figure, that would be an elected official, it would be a media celebrity, it would be anybody who's famous, basically, or anybody who has name recognition, roughly. Even if somebody publishes something bad against you or insulting against you, even if it's false, you cannot sue them for libel unless you can prove that they intentionally did it knowing it was false, or even a simple phone call or inquiry could have told them it was false. And anything that's just opinion, you can't sue about. So if you say Ron Johnson's a terrible senator, he can't sue you. Even if you say something factual about him that turns out to be false, he can't sue you unless he can prove. You don't have to disprove. He has to prove that you did it intentionally, knowing that it was false. And most people don't do it knowing that it's false. Immediately, that took out lawsuits by politicians, media celebrities, singers, anybody with name recognition. And so if you publish something, say it or write it, and the overall tort is called defamation. You've heard that term, defamation of character. And underneath it, there are two branches. One is libel and one is slander. You've heard those. Libel is written defamation. Slander is verbal defamation. One exception to that is that if it's verbal but on TV or radio, it's treated like libel because it has such a big distribution. Well, that single-handedly has permitted free political speech and criticism. You could criticize Lyndon Johnson over the Vietnam War. You could say Nixon's a crook. You could say anything. And the idea is that if you're famous and have name recognition, you can defend yourself because the press will pick up your denial, your refutation. Well, Clarence Thomas wants to change that. He wants to roll back New York Times versus Sullivan and attacks free speech again. So you can't say, if you said that Ron Johnson betrayed this state by saying that he doesn't trust the FBI and the CIA and he likes Putin and he sued you for libel with the Republican donors paying for it, you could not, quite frankly, you go under if Clarence Thomas had his way. And the reason you'd go under is because you'd have to come up with a lawyer and then Johnson say, well, I didn't say I liked Putin exactly, and betrayal is a serious charge, and this, that, and the other thing. So this goes right to the heart of free speech in our society and political discourse. Keep that in mind, what this guy is doing. This is not just somebody, he's not a conservative. Conservatives believe in free speech. They don't believe in the government interfering with free speech. Going to the lines, Bill of Oconomowoc, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's in your mind today, Bill?
Good morning, Matt. As usual, you're on. I love the topic you're picked, talking about. You know, with the Supreme Court, they've overreached their reach. They're now trying to legislate from the bench. They believe they can just run the country themselves. I do have a couple questions for you. The first question is, and I'll hang up and let you answer both of them. First question is, they can be shut down by the president, and he can issue an order, enough is enough, because they're going to try and take this country. My second question to you, Matt, is, I don't believe the motivation's coming out of the court. I believe the motivation for that court is coming out of these extreme right-wing think tanks. I'll hang up. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, the two things. Well, first of all, you know, in the Constitution, the president, Bill, can't just shut down the Supreme Court. Now, the president can do certain things by executive order. And in times of extreme national emergency, let me give you an example, World War II. Well, let me give you a better example. Let's say in the Civil War, Lincoln, they try to assassinate Lincoln in Baltimore on the way that went for his being sworn in. The minute he gets in, South Carolina fires on Fort Sumter, and there's a declaration of war, and he institutes a draft, and then the Civil War starts. If the Supreme Court back then had somehow issued a ruling that the South had a right to succeed under the Constitution, Lincoln wouldn't have obeyed it. He probably would have arrested them. There was a court in Maryland. Now, most people don't remember this, but Maryland is sort of like a southern state. Washington, D.C. was described by John Kennedy, he's a very witty guy, as a city that combines southern efficiency with northern charm. But basically, it's seen as southern. James Madison and the Southerners wanted the capital not to be in Philadelphia, a northern city, but it be in Washington, D.C. So Virginia, Richmond, was the capital of the Confederacy. That's right next to D.C. Maryland was seen as pro-southern. And Maryland judges issued orders telling Lincoln to stop doing stuff. He just ignored them. We were in the middle of a war. If in the middle of 1943, we're fighting the Nazis and the Japanese, and the Supreme Court had said, stop doing it, Roosevelt wouldn't have stopped doing it. He would have probably jailed them. But those were extreme cases. Right now, some people have suggested that Biden issue an executive order legalizing abortion and just saying that there is a health emergency. That's a little more attenuated, and he's not inclined to do that. But let's say that in the old days there was a smallpox or the plague or the Black Death or something that was killing everybody, and they said we couldn't do certain things. president wouldn't obey it. So what you're describing, Bill, is a most extreme kind of response. And that's one that right now I don't think anybody is contemplating. And your second thing, though, what is their motivation? I agree with you. There's this thing called the Federalist Society, and it was started back in the 1980s. And the idea was strict construction. And not all Federalist Society members believe in Trump or the MAGA right, because he's not a real conservative. But in any event, they worked and worked and worked and wormed in people in lower judgeships who got promoted to bigger judgeships. And they lay in the weeds for 40 years, 35, 40 years. And so, yes, there is that motivation from the Federalist Society. Whenever you see a Republican president or Moscow Mitch proposing judicial nominees, you'll see a term called the Federalist Society. They all belong to the Federalist Society. All the Republicans on the Supreme Court belong to the Federalist Society. Yes, that is a right-wing group. That is their motivation. But within the right wing, there is difference of opinion. You've seen the Lincoln Project. The Lincoln Project, Republicans who are anti-Trumpers, who put on terrific ads against Trump. Some of them are members of the Federalist Society. So the right-wing motivation is split, but there's an overarching motivation, that anything to do with guns or abortion or voting rights has to go one way, the way of the Republican Party. There is that motivation. There's a split in foreign policy. One of the things that I would encourage the Democratic Party to do is, instead of being so squad-like and left-wing about identity politics, there are a lot of ethnic people, ethnic groups in this country who are Republicans, who are very conservative, but they are very anti-Russian. They're either Polish or Ukrainian descent or Baltic descent. And when you have people like Trump and Tucker Carlson going pro-Russian, that is the wedge. They're not going to put up with that. And that's why I am very firm on foreign policy. I'm one of the few in the Democratic Party. Very, very firm on foreign policy. And that is the kind of thing we should be emphasizing. We should split the Federalist Society. Bill, excellent comments, as always. Really appreciate your calling in, as always. Going to break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.